From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Oh, the Dice Men Cometh! But not this Dice Man. I'm so sorry, guys. I was so looking forward to being back on the show this week. Oh, I'm not going to make it. Damn holidays. You always get sick at the end of them, don't you? Anyway, I'm sure Leon and Garth will look after you. I better go back to bed. And hopefully I'll be well enough next week to be back on the show. Bye!
Well, there you go. That was the sick and not quite recuperating Mark Rickards.
No, not at all.
Who didn't introduce himself at all.
No.
Maybe because of his serious illness.
Yep.
But believe it or not, this is the Dice Men Cometh, which, believe it or not, is Australia's number one, nay, the Southern Hemisphere's number one radio show and podcast. It's all about board gaming, all about card games, all about things you do on, around, near, in, under, through tables. And we are here for what we believe is episode 260.
Indeed,
for tonight.
Indeed. On the 9th of May, 2019. Can you believe it?
I can't believe it's May, let alone believe that it's 2019.
It's nearly halfway through the year. Isn't that ridiculous?
So tonight you will be joined by myself, Garth, and my other self, Leon.
Yes, I am.
And
the other
tonight,
self.
Seeing as Mark pulled a shifty and decided, screw you guys, I'm going home to bed. We are creating an episode, or at least half an episode, with nay a moment's notice.
Yep.
Which is why we are going to be doing not one, not two, but potentially three what we have been playing lately.
Maybe even four if we've got nothing else to talk about. But
that's
who knows?
Right. We will learn to stretch.
Yes.
So before we get to that, we have to play a song.
Indeed.
Then we're going to come back and we are going to start the way that I hoped we would start, by introducing something old.
Yes.
Something ancient.
Mm.
Something that maybe is relevant, but was possibly more relevant 20 years ago. And of course that was going to be Mark.
Of course, yes.
But it is now the game that we have played most lately by award-winning designers, but we will not tell you what it is until we come back from the song. So you are with the Dice Men Cometh. It is Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and here is that particular song.
I'm Matthew Lee from The Campaigner, and I listen to the world's best podcast, and I also listen to the Dice Men Cometh.
Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh, and that was Mount Trout and Boxing, a local Tassie act.
Wasn't that amazing?
It was indeed grand. Now, even though Mr. Mark is not here, we are going to do something which we've done a bit in the last year, and I'm quite happy that we have. We're going to talk about a classic, which a lot of people may have, A, never heard of, B, not got to the table for a long time, or C, just not got to the table at all.
Exactly. Or D, it might have been a game before Leon Cannon was almost born. Because we're talking about a game from 1999, Leon.
I was 12, but sure.
Yeah, but just let me go with
it. Okay, I'll let you go with it.
So what we're going to talk about tonight is, look, if you can all cast your memories back 7 days, like the world was a younger place, we were all happy, there was no dictators in any coloured houses.
The Black Death was a thing of history.
Probably someone had the bubonic plague from eating raw rat's brains. Who knows?
Yes.
But 1 week ago, you and I, Leon, were sitting in this very studio and we finished up and went to a local drinking establishment.
Yes.
Because that's what we do sometimes.
Generally.
We had a private room booked, which is what we do sometimes, and we turned up to play a game because on Thursday nights, we have a rolling cavalcade of contributors.
It is a rogues gallery indeed.
And everyone gets the choice once every however long to choose their particular game. And good friend of the show, Carl, who long-time listeners and not-so-long-time listeners will at least know the name.
Yes.
He is an old soul.
Yes.
And his games are old. But that's all right.
Even though his nickname's Hot Carl. Weird.
Exactly. And what he brought to the table was possibly a classic, but what it was and still is a Spiel des Jahres winner.
Yeah, and it is a game that I must say, I've heard the name before, and that's where that ended. We've talked recently about classics, things like Chinatown. I'd at least heard of that and heard of people saying, oh, I wish that was reprinted. And things like El Grande, that was the big box only came out a few years ago. And again, I'd known of it, but I just never got around to it. This game, I'd heard the name, and that's the last I'd heard. And the name was probably heard once many years ago, and that was the end of that story.
But also young people have less of attention span, and I'll put you in that category, Leon. So anyway, what we are talking about is Spiel des Jahres winner 1999.
Mm.
And for those of you playing at home, we are talking Torres.
Indeed we are.
Now, Torres is a Euro abstract game where you, meaning me, and you, Leon, and all the people out in Radio Land and Podcast Land will start with six knights, and it'll just be this blank board that looks kind of like a chessboard. It's all just a bunch of squares. But the sole objective that you will be to make your towers the tallest that you can possibly do, because the higher the towers, the bigger the towers, the wider the towers, the everything the towers is how you are going to get all of those towery points.
Mm.
And whoever gets the most points over three rounds is going to be declared this particular winner. It is a game that requires some knights, some castle pieces, some action cards, and maybe some instructions on what those action cards mean. But it's also got a couple of little different variations depending on the style of gameplay that you want to have. But what is that gameplay? Well, before we get to that, Leon, let's talk about the pedigree of this game.
Oh, it's got some of that pedigree. It's awfully chummy.
So these designers, because indeed it is a collaborative effort, are the designers of some of the most well-known modern games, let alone games from 20-odd years ago, indeed last century, and we are talking about the Kiesling and Kramer variety here.
Indeed we are.
So, Leon, would you be so kind to rattle off some of the games that these particular gentlemen have designed over some of the years?
Okie dokie. So, Mr. Kiesling, by himself, Azul, which, you know, bit of a big game, these ranked 37 on BGG. Heaven and Ale, which Mark loved, did he not?
Well, apart from the fact it didn't involve actually...
Yeah, he did not like that, but definitely in the minority, a lot of people were big fans of that. Vikings, which again was quite good. And then we've got the other designer, a Mr. Wolfgang Kramer, who is the man behind El Grande. Well done, sir. The Princess of Florence, Colosseum, Downforce, but together they have done Coal Baron. They have
done that game.
They have done Mexica. They have done Maharaja and Tikal as well. But most importantly, they then also moved on to Torres.
Yeah, so these guys...
They've done all right.
They know how to design not just a game or a mechanic or a simple concept. They know how to design board games. And that is brilliant.
Yeah.
Because we're fans. They also have a lot to do with the fact that your scoreboard just goes on the outside of your board.
Yep.
It's very simple. So Torres... Sorry, Leon... Looks like you want to say something.
I do, so I'm going to jump in first because there is a little square on this board game box that I believe should be on every single board game from, it should have been, from 20 years ago up until now and forevermore. What it does, it tells you the age limit, which for this says 12 to 99. Bit unfair, 100-year-olds could play it. And as we've discussed before, people under the age of 12 could easily play this. I mean, it might be a bit long and it might be a bit thinky, but it ain't difficult at all. Between 2 to 4 players, grand. It says it takes about 60 minutes. Give or take. Knowledge, 0 out of 5. You don't need no knowledge to play distance
games.
That's
why you liked it, Leon.
Yeah, indeed. Communication, 1 out of 5. And action, 0 out of 5. There's not a lot of action. But this little chart, and I've seen it on 1 or 2 games in the past, I do not know why it's not standard on every single game. So you could turn and go, I'm a person that loves strategy. You turn this over and go, 5 out of 5. I'm interested.
Mm.
Or, oh, there's no action. I like an action kind of game. I'll put that one back. It just seems so simple, and I don't know why we do not do it.
Correct. So, look, what I did in preparation for this show is I went to Board Game Geek and I typed up Torres, and then I go to the Files tab. And the reason I go to the Files tab is because you'll very often find player aids that you can then download. And I decided, you know what? I'm going to do that. I'm going to print off a player aid.
Yes.
Now, the joy of this is it's one page. The joy of the other half of this is that half of the page is actually the rules and the other half is the details on the card explanation, which become important. But what I love about this is the gameplay out of a whole A4 page is 3 dot points. And that tells you exactly how complicated this game is at its essence.
Which is not very, which a lot of these old games, that's pretty much exactly where they sit. I was going to quickly say that we should possibly do one day a section which could probably be the nichest thing we've ever done on this show, where we should do an entire section about the file section on BGG, because there's some rippers for certain games, I can tell you right now.
Oh, is there ever?
Yes.
But I love it.
Mm.
So look, in this game, as I say, everyone's going to start with six knights, i.e. six meeples. You're going to score around the end of the board, and we'll get to that, because that's all good and well, except until you reach the end of the score track.
Yeah, that's right.
You're also potentially going to start with no cards or some cards, because, as I alluded to a little bit before, there is a module where you can start with cards, or you don't, depending on how you want to play it. So once everyone's chosen their colour, and I'm red, and Leon's something, and Mark is always green, he's always green. Anyone who plays with Mark, it's always going to be green.
Yeah.
You then have the youngest player start. And essentially, before we get to this, the object of the game, as I mentioned, is to have the tallest, widest castle. Because the rules are pretty simple in this. You're going to be building castles, but you're not going to own them. And that's important, because there'll be six knights of each colour potentially roaming around the board. And you might think, hey, I'm going to build this biggest, tallest castle and no one can infiltrate my castle, but they can. And they will. But you always want to have your knight, i.e. a meeple, mm-hmm. on the highest possible level of this particular castle. And the reason for that is that the points you will get for each of your castles is the height of the castle, which is determined by these really cool chunky tile blocks that can go up and up and up and up and up. But the points you'll get is the height of your castle, the number of blocks, times the floor area of your castle, how many tiles in width it is,
the
surface area, the base dimensions. So say, for example, I've got a castle that is precisely one stack high, but there are four things that stack one height, I would get 4 points. But if I happen to grow the castle to two and I have a meeple on top of it, I now get 2 times 4, which means I get 8 points.
That is math.
Leon.
Yes.
I'm going to throw a curly one at you.
Right.
If I had a tower that was 4 high and 4 surface area, how many points?
16.
There you go.
Yeah.
Now, this is where this game gets one of its very few rules, which is you can only ever have a castle as high as its surface area on the base. So that aforementioned castle, which is 4 squares on surface area on the board, can only ever be a maximum of 4 things high.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the most complicated rule that you have to remember, especially on the base game of this Torres.
There is not many rules at all, and they are so simple, but the amount of times on your turn you go to do something and you go, oh, that's right, I can't because of that thing. Mm. So is almost there is probably only one or two things you can do on your turn, like logically, that would make sense, but your mind goes through 100 different things before you get to those.
Yeah, so let's get to that. I mean, this game is all about action points.
Yes.
So it is a Euro heavy strategy abstract game, but you will be going to be using the action points on your turn, and you will get 5 of those.
Yes.
So adding a knight is going to cost you 2 of those, and you can put that on anywhere on the board as long as it is orthogonally adjacent to one of your other knights and on an equal or lower height of a castle.
Mm-hmm.
You can move a knight for 1 spot, and again, it's all orthogonal. There is no such thing as diagonal movement in this game, except for a card that we'll get to, and that'll cost you a point. And, of course, you can move that knight on and on and on and on and on. They can only ever jump up 1 level because steps.
Yeah, well, obviously.
You can also place 1 tower block.
Yeah.
And this is important because, unlike a lot of games, you're going to be really confined to the amount of towers that you can build and therefore how tall you can make a castle, how wide you can make a castle. And the way it'll work is that you'll get, depending on the number of players, probably something like 3 bits of castle that you can build in the first round, 3 bits that you can play in the second, maybe 2 and 2 in the last couple of rounds.
Mm-hmm.
But it is restricted. And I love this little mechanic because you're going to start with four piles. And as I say, we played in a three-player game. So we had three that you could play in the first round, three in the second, and then two and two. Doesn't matter, you have to do it in that order. You can have one round where you just play two. Or...
it's a rough round.
You can take your stack of three and only play two of them and then put the one remaining one on top of the stack of two so that you've done that round of two earlier and you can do your stack of three in some later round because you may be planning a super move.
Yeah, like I said, it becomes a power thing where you go, like, you want to put out as many... you always want to put more than three, but you never can. That's one of those things that the cards might break certain game rules, but at no point can you ever place more than three, yet you always bloody want to.
And that's what I love, because it's not giving you three tiles, sorry, three castle pieces that you can play every single round. It's giving you three and three and then two and two.
Mm.
So you've really got to time your moves quite right. The other things you can do with these particular action points is you can acquire an action card. Now, in the base version of this game, you're going to start with precisely zero cards, but there are, from memory, eight different cards in each of the colours that you can acquire. Now, I could be completely wrong with that.
I think there's 12.
Fine. So there's a number between 8 and 12 of cards, and what those cards are game breakers. They will be cards that... for zero action points, you can play one and only one per turn, and they might allow you to do something that is redonkulous.
Mm.
You might be able to, heaven forbid, move a knight diagonally.
What? Yeah, stop the radio right now.
You might be able to take a little piece of someone else's castle and add it to your castle.
Mm-hmm.
You might be able to have a knight not just go up the one floor because of steps, but go up an unlimited number of levels and go from the bottom to the very, very top of a tower.
Yes, do not use that ability early on in the game, everyone.
So those cards are critical, and it's probably the biggest difference between the base game and I think the Masters version or the Advanced version or whatever it is it's called,
which
where
of course,
you start with all of those.
Which, of course, we played straight away because that is what we are.
Mm.
But as I said before, I'm pretty sure there's 12 cards because there is 12 rounds in the game, which is, I think, is a very cool thing that you're going to go, okay, so logically, I want to use one every single round. And then you go, okay, well, I don't actually feel like using one this round. Well, that means there's one of them that you flat out will not use because you can never use more than two in a round, so they're completely gone.
But the game also tells you, hey, you should be using them because they cost precisely zero action points.
Yes.
But you won't want to.
Mm.
And look, the other thing you can do, which is kind of the, I'm stuck in a corner, I've got nothing else to do, I've got an action just sitting there, burning a hole in my action pocket, is acquire a point.
Yeah.
Now, that's just kind of the move that you do, clearly, when you don't have anything better to do, but the joy of this is that no two players can ever contain the same score.
Mm-hmm.
So, Leon, if you happen to be on seven, and I'm on six, and I use this, I don't go to seven because... I got an eight.
Yee.
So you can sort of leapfrog people and, you know, should the score track be appropriately laid out with a couple of your opponents in order, you could easily jump up a couple of spaces.
That just reminds me of something I want to quickly mention that has nothing to do with this conversation whatsoever. I finally, the other weekend, after about 18 months, got around to playing Role Player, which you've had, and we've tried to play like three times, and for some reason, it was like a curse that I was never going to get to play it. I finally got to the table with a lot of my friends. The reasoning I'm mentioning it right now is because at the end of like a 2.5 hour game with five of us, the scores were 25, 26, 27, 28, and 29.
Yeah, wow.
And that was amazing, because we were all enjoying ourselves, but if we'd realised that, like, by the end of the last round, we all would have been like, oh, my God, it's actually important, whereas we were just enjoying ourselves. But imagine if we had that mechanic in that game.
Absolutely.
And the person that was last scored that extra point, boom, victor.
There you go. So, look, this game is most easily described as Santorini Advance, and that is the most relevant modern game that you can relate it to. You're going to be placing things. You're going to be moving knights. You want to be getting your knights as high as possible. The only concept we haven't really discussed is that there is a king that roams around. And the king will always belong to one of the particular castles. And what he will do is he will add value to it. So in the first round, the king will be on a castle. And if you happen to have a meeple on level one, he'll give you five bonus points. Whoever is then coming last at the end of the first scoring section will get to move that king to any of the other castles. And remembering, you don't own castles. You just are part of them. So he'll move them to another castle. And then if you happen to have a night on the second level, not the first, not the third, but on the second level of this castle, you get 10 points. And then the third scoring round, whatever castle the king is on, if you're on level 3, you'll get 15 points. So there are bonuses that go along with that. That is in the base game, the master, and even in another version of this game, mm-hmm. which we didn't play, and I'm glad we didn't. And I'll get to that in a little while. But we've talked about what this game is. Leon, did you like this game?
I thought this game was excellent. It is exactly as you said. It is Santorini Advanced. And when we were playing, as soon as we did put the setup in front of us, I went, that's what this is. Carl having not played Santorini, but us two have. And then you went through it and just went, yeah, that's pretty much exactly what this is. Now, it's something that we need to mention, and it's an absolute shame that Mark isn't here, because the reason why we thought it was quite funny is that Mark played this once years ago and hated it.
He hates
this game with a passion. But we don't actually know why, which is a shame because he's not here to tell. But we're pretty sure it's because of the people he played with were suffering from that evil analysis paralysis. Mm. Because as we discovered, with the three of us playing, it probably took about 2 hours. But again, banter and drinks and stuff as we always do. But I must admit, I probably took the longest on my turns, because it happens from time to time. But there is just, it's one of those things where there's, like I said, there's only a few things you can do, but the decision on which one to do, it's, there's simple decisions. But again, you can kind of a lot, like pretty much nearly any of these old Euro games from 20 odd years ago, you can sit there and kind of math it out in your head. And so if you played it with people that were really hard of making decisions, this would probably drive you insane.
Yes. So there are two key takeaways I have from playing this game, and admittedly, we've only played it once.
Yep.
The first takeaway is, if you are concerned that there is an analysis paralysis prone person playing this game, have a timer.
Yep. It's reasonable.
That's simple.
Yep.
Have a timer. The other rule that you can choose to put in place, which is certainly, as far as I know, not in the rule book, but something that I would suggest, again, if you're worried, is play it like chess.
Yep.
And by that I mean, as soon as you've placed a knight or something on the board,
yep,
and removed your hand from it,
that's that done.
It's done.
Yep.
Because you're right, Leon, we only had three of us, and it did take several hours, and that was fine because we had a great time.
Mm-hmm.
But how many times were we removing knights, removing bits of tower block, reassessing, doing all those things, looking at what cards are available to other people and going, oh, I need to do this. And that just takes time.
Yep.
And that's fine if it's with the right group. But this game could be played in an hour.
Yeah,
easily. If it's a base game and you're given a minute per turn to do a thing.
Yep. And the thing that I would say as well that we mentioned before is that we played the master version of this game, where you had every single card in your hand, or me and Garth laid them out in front of us, because why not? We've all got the same cards anyway.
Yep.
From the start. Now, this would make the setup, you know, a few minutes longer, because you have to explain to people every single card as opposed to when they just come up. But I think this is the way to go, because as I read out earlier, that little square that was on the back of the box, which explained that it had the 1 out of 5 in luck, that makes that to 0. There's no luck whatsoever in a game where you play as the master version and everyone has those cards in front of you, which we've said when we've talked again about El Grande recently and Chinatown and stuff like that, that these older games that are as much about strategy as you can, those games have, you know, a tiny bit of dice rolling here, a tiny bit of luck, like what you're pulling out of a bag and that kind of stuff. Whereas this, you can make it 100%. The person that wins this is the person that made the best moves.
You are 100% right, Leon.
Mm-hmm.
Because that person did win.
Yes.
The person who made the best decisions,
yes,
the most strategic play, was able to do everything at an optimal level.
Mm.
And we won't talk about that particular person who's talking right now, because they smashed it out of the ballpark and it was a beautiful thing to behold. But the point is, everyone had fun.
But the battle for second and third, that was tight.
It was tight.
That was very impressive. Also, we need to mention that this game is a part of it's an unofficial part of the games called the Mask Trilogy, which is by Mr. Kramer and Mr. Kiesling, which is Takao, Java, and Mexica. So if anybody that likes the sound of Torres, they're worth looking at too. Are they, like, Takao is probably more well-known than any of them. And the thing that they all have in common is this action point system, that on your turn you have this certain amount of points and you do certain things. So this Torres is considered an unofficial
in this trilogy, which would make it a quadrology.
Quadrology, like
and
Alien.
I believe that Torres is kind of considered the possibly the best game out of the lot of them, but might not be the most well-known. And it was only reprinted. I didn't even realise this, but straight away, halfway through the game as I was enjoying it, got on me Amazons, me Ebays, me Polymorphs, all those, to check out the old cheeky price. It was only reprinted like 2 years ago, so at the same time as Santorini. And again, this game could be for your older people, because it's a bit bland. It is kind of moving, as you said, chess on the board. But if you're a good parent, Garth, which you may be, you may not, but
I have my moments.
Yeah. If you're a good parent, you have Santorini. Do you have Santorini?
No, I borrow yours.
Exactly. Santorini is a great game, especially for younger people, and for teaching them strategy and things like that. And it's so quick and so colourful and so awesome. This, as we said, is that game advanced, so you could easily move them up for that if they really enjoy that onto this. So it's almost like an introductory game, even though it is for kind of your hardcore strategy folks. So it ticks a lot of them boxes.
Oh, it sure does.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go. That's Torres.
Yes, give it a crack.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
Don't listen to Mark.
No.
I mean, full stop. Don't listen to Mark, but don't listen to Mark explicitly about this game. And on that bombshell, we'll throw to a song, and then we'll come back and talk about something else, because that's what we're paid to be here for.
Indeed.
With the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM.
Hi, I'm Jamie Stegmaier from Stonemaier Games, and you are listening to the Dice Men Cometh podcast.
Wow. Well, there you go. Our studio has some exceptional songs.
Well, it certainly does.
And this exceptional song was Arca with Saunter.
Yep.
They are not Tasmanian.
No.
They are not Australian.
Nope.
So they're probably not listening.
No.
Which is a shame, because that was amazing. So you're with the Dice Men Cometh. It is Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
Yes.
Leon
indeed
wants to talk about a game.
I do indeed.
That is full of plastic.
Yes.
And a couple of pins.
Yeah.
And here he is with it.
Indeed he do. Now, my game of the year last year was Werewords Deluxe.
It was.
I do love myself a quick game. I love a game that you can pretty much teach while you play the first round, and then it's over, and everyone always goes, ooh, I want to do that again. Party games are one of those things that I don't necessarily seek them out, but I have so many of them on my collection. I mean, obviously they don't take up as much room as your giant big boxes. Batman, where are you? Please turn up soon.
Yeah, except on your birthday, because you bring several suitcases worth of party games to the chapel room.
Yes.
And on that day, 12 hours of gaming hilarity ensues.
Yes, indeed. So, the game we're going to be talking about today is a game called Just One, which is for 3 to 7 players. FYI, you want to play it with at least 6 or 7.
Correct.
If it's less than that, probably don't even bother. It says it takes about 20 minutes. Overall, yes, that's if you play the entire game. You don't have to. You can just play one round of this at the pub like we did the other night.
This is very much a play as long as people are having fun kind of game, isn't it?
Yes, it's one of those things that you can score it if you like, and it's kind of fun, but you don't have to at all. Very much your telestrations kind of in that sort of way. So, what is this game? Well, I'll explain it in the simple way that when I teach people how to play it, how you do it. What you're going to do is there's going to be a deck of cards, and in those cards, there's going to be words on them. There's going to be 5 on each card, numbered from 1 to, you've got it,
5.
5. And what you're going to have in front of you is this little, what would you call it, a little easel, perhaps?
Yeah.
It's not really. It's a little plastic standee thing.
It's a standee where you will be able to slide that card in. But also on the other side of it, there's enough space to, like, theoretically write a word if you wanted to.
Exactly. So, say it was my turn. I would put a card on it facing out to everybody else. I can't see the card. I have no idea. And I'm just going to say a number from 1 to 5. Say I say 3. Remember that, Garth? That's 3. How many times on quiz night did you get that wrong? It was at least 2 or 3.
Hey, it wasn't on quiz night. It was pre-quiz night.
Yeah.
Because we did all right at quiz night.
But yes.
I didn't do all right in Just One.
No. So I would say a number, in this case 3. Everyone else would look at it and say, Facebook, which was one of the ones that we did.
No, they wouldn't say anything, Leon, you're not allowed to say the word.
Sorry.
You will say it in your brain.
They will see the word Facebook. And now what they're going to do is on their same little plastic screens that they have, they will write a word that is trying to get me to the word Facebook.
Yes, because this is a completely, fully cooperative game.
Yes, think of it as Werewords, but without the traitor, unless you're Garth, who writes the wrong word because he thinks the wrong number was said, and it just makes no sense whatsoever.
Look, the beer was nice.
Yes, you'd think so after that many of them. Anywho,
So, say Facebook. So I put like Messenger down for mine. Somebody else
likes.
Put likes. Things of that nature.
Zuckerberg.
Indeed. Then what we're going to do is the person that is guessing this round, who hasn't seen that word yet, doesn't know it at all, they're going to close their eyes and everyone's going to turn around their little bits of plastic. And if any two people have the same word, they're going to rub them out and that's going to be out of this round.
Not so, quite. They're going to swear.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And then rub them out.
Yes, they're going to swear, of course.
And then yes. Those particular words will play no further round,
no.
No part of that round.
So you could open your eyes and have five words sitting in front of you if you're playing with six people. That's awesome. You could open your eyes and have one word or no words. Because the trick of this game is that straight away when something comes out, you'd go, well, I could put the most obvious word, but someone else is going to put that. So I'll put the second other word, but someone else might put that. And your kind of brain does this little trick thing of not knowing what to do.
Yeah, and then you go, well, everyone's not going to put the most obvious word because they're all going to think that everyone's going to put the most obvious word, so no one's going to do it, so I'm going to put the most obvious word.
Yes.
And then Joe Dingbat goes and puts the obvious word, but I put the most obvious word.
Yes, I know. So, for instance, one of the words we had the other night was leap. And then straight away I thought, jump. That was the first thing that came to my head. No. Even though you can only put one word, I thought you could put faith, as in leap of faith. That's not too difficult. And then I thought, frog. Oh, leap, frog, frog's leap. Yep, cool. So that was the third word I thought of. So I thought, that's good enough. I wrote it down. Then we all turned our things around. Every person on the bloody table had written down frog.
Mm, so the except one who deliberately tried to be a little bit obtuse and write frogger.
Yes.
Which incorrectly spelt frogger.
Yes. But Bowie's special like that.
Yeah,
and, but that did not count, so that was out. So that's all it is. And in this game, you would do this 13 times. So every time somebody will be the guesser, you'll pass it around. So that's why it's good with, like, six people or seven people. So for the official scoring, you'll do 13. And then in the book, it'll tell you however many you got right. That's kind of like the g'day, you know, well done kind of thing.
You got three out of 13. Go back to school.
Yeah, that's almost exactly what it says. And they're like 4 to 6. It was like, you're kind of getting there. 7 to 9, like, well done, and then so on and so forth. But again, you don't have to score it if you don't want to. And if it sounds simple, it's because it is.
Yeah.
Because that's all the game is. It's just one, and it's just simple, like a good party game should be.
Exactly. And look, the components are fine. The card quality is really, really good. The words that are on each card, and we've seen a fair few of them.
Yeah.
You understand what all of them mean.
Yep.
If you read the right numbers. Like, if you confuse blonde with blood and write clot, and then when you reveal your word and no one understands why have you written clot when the word was blonde, and you go, I thought it was blood, and it wasn't because it was blonde and it was clearly written as blonde, and then the person had to open their eyes and saw these five little white plastic things, and you had, you know, Ditzy and a few other things, and then clot.
Blonde clot. It was great.
Just saying.
Yeah.
Someone should pay more attention to the words that you
Yes, they
to
certainly
choose.
Would. Now, this game was originally called We Are the World and was published by Fun Consortium many, many years ago. But it was republished recently, and there's a reason for that, is because the people that designed this game, whose names I'm about to butcher, Ludwig Rowdy, I want to say, and Bruno Saunter. They have become a wee bit famous in the board gaming world because in the last several years, so they released that game. I'd never heard of it. You'd never heard of it. And most people have probably never heard of it. Then they released another game that they had on Kickstarter, which is the exact opposite of this bloody game. And that is
it slightly longer or like, is it not a party game?
Just a little. Yeah, it's quite literally different in every single aspect. And that is Seventh Continent. So the guys that designed Just One, as it is known now, designed Seven Continent, and then they went to a different company, went to Repost Productions and said, we had this game that no one cared about, but people know our names now. Do you want it? And they're like, all right. And it turns out the game was good. So it's almost like the Torres thing, is that you'd be amazed how many of these games out here that are good, that just need to get into people's hands.
Yeah, wow. And the reality is, it wouldn't really take too long for you to not actually need this game. You could just make it an activity.
Yeah.
And someone closes their eyes and someone writes a word, and then you come up with something else, and away you go, and you just go round and round and round. You know, there's the games where you don't actually need the components.
Mm-hmm.
Like Time's Up. Yeah. Have a few palm cards, away you go, and everyone's going to have a great time. You don't need the physical game. Just One is like that.
Yes, and it is done very well for itself. It is number 16 in the party game category of all time. But take that with a grain of salt, because number 2 is Decrypto. So a lot of people can be very wrong about things.
We received something about Decrypto.
Ooh.
And we're not allowed to talk about it.
Really?
Until the 17th of May.
Oh, good. Does that mean we have to play it again?
Maybe.
That's the thing you and Mark can do when I'm not here, I don't think. So anyway, Just One is a game that I've played. It's the game I've played the most this year by far, but doesn't really count when the game only takes 5 minutes. And I know it's kind of silly to put small five-minute games in like your game of the year type thing, but at the moment, it's in there for me already for this year, just for the fact that, again, so simple, and the enjoyment factor. This is a game that cost me probably less than $30, probably $20. And the amount of fun we've had out of it from just the first game alone, let alone all the rest of the times, it's worth its weight in gold.
Perfect. So there you go. That was Just One. Leon, thank you very much for sharing that. We are going to throw to a song,
mm-hmm.
and then we're going to talk about our third, what we've been playing lately.
Yeah.
Which is not a game that we've been playing lately, but we have played it a bit and we deserve to talk about it.
Yes.
So you're with the Dice Men Cometh. It is Edge Radio 99.3 FM. I'm going to push a button and then we'll come back after this song.
Indeed.
Oh, I love this song. Excuse me, everyone. Just wanted to pop in and say hello. It's Mark here, and welcome all the new listeners. What I'd love for you all to do, if you haven't done it before, is jump onto iTunes and leave us a review. 5 stars would be awesome, but whatever you think we're worth, it makes a big difference to helping us get the podcast out to all the people there who don't know about it already. Of course, we'd love you to support us on Patreon as well, and to share the love on all your social media feeds. But if you could do the iTunes review for us, that would be absolutely amazing. Anyway, back to the track.
Well, there you go. That was Bass Varlet with Something Arcana.
Yeah.
And they were a Tassie act, and that's fine.
Yeah.
You are with the Dice Men Cometh. It's Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We have got games to talk about,
mm-hmm.
and Leon is going to talk about another game. But before he talks about that,
We
need to say thank you to Wizards of the Coast
yes.
for providing that game to us.
Yes, and I must say, when you said, oh, Leon, by the way, I got an email today from Wizards of the Coast. They're sending me something. I went, oh, and then this arrived, and I went, cool.
It is quite, arguably...
not quite what I was thinking, but sure.
The smallest
yeah.
possible game that Wizards of the Coast have ever
oh, yeah.
been in, involved with.
Yep.
But anyway, that's okay. Good things occasionally come in small packages. So what yeah. is it that you are talking about tonight, Leon?
We are going to quickly talk about Dungeon Mayhem, which is a small 2-4 player... it's a 4-player, 10-minute card game set in the Dungeons & Dragons universe where you can pick your character between the barbarian, the paladin, the rogue, or the wizard, and you're going to battle it out for a dungeon full of treasure. But that's not really what you're doing. What you're really doing is killing your mates.
Yes.
So the whole point of this game is it's kind of like King of Tokyo Light with cards instead of dice.
Yeah, and even lighter.
Yeah, because it says 10 minutes. That's probably pushing it. It's probably about a 5-minute game. Now, I actually enjoy this for what it is, for a game that you could play this, again, between big games as a palate cleanser. It's not a game where if somebody said, what are we playing tonight all night, and they put this in front of you, you go, oh.
Yep.
But you never know who can do it.
It's not a Vitala sort of game.
No.
You look at the heaviness of it on BGG and it just squeaks past the one barrier.
Yeah.
And look, that is absolutely fine. You?
Yeah.
Leon?
Yeah.
I'm Garth and him, Mark. Yeah. We all played it.
Yes, we did.
And we had some fun.
We did indeed. So the whole point of this game is you've got these cards in your hand and what you can do is pretty... the obvious things you would think of. You can play a card. Some of them will let you attack your fellow players. Sometimes all of them, sometimes just one of them. You can play shields to defend yourself from other characters. You can play hearts to give yourself some health back. But again, these characters fit the actual archetypes of the D&D characters. So the barbarian is going to hit for more. The paladin's going to have more healing stuff. The rogue's going to have more tricky stuff. Wizard's going to have more spell type things. Because there is also an ability, if a little lightning bolt comes up when you play a card, you then get to play another card. So the rogue is the one that has the most of those because of your things like your sneak sneaky and you backstab and stuff. So you can play several cards to do heaps of little attacks, but then maybe the barbarian could just come along and go, rah, one big smack, and then take you out.
Yeah, you can chain things because you're sneaky.
Yeah.
Or you can just hit things because you're big and bulky. And look, it's pretty simple. The card iconography will show you hammers or lightning bolts or shield symbols so that you know exactly what it is that you're getting into on your particular turn.
Yep.
There is player elimination.
Yep.
Because you are all just laying the smack down.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where it's not like D&D at all because you're not working together defeat the goblins or the whatever it is.
Nope.
You're D&D fighting each other in a death match to the death.
But again, player elimination sucks. But it's a 5 to 10 minute
correct.
So, you know, what are you going to do? That's the whole point of this game, to destroy your other friends. And it's got cool, like, very cartoony style art.
Mm.
Definitely not your serious Wizards of the Coast actual D&D book kind of art, which I think if it did, it'd be even blander, it'd be worse. It'd be like, yeah. Whereas with this art, you can see what they're going for. They were going for, you want to have a laugh with your mates, you want to have a bit of, I stabbed you, I hit you, I whatever else.
Well, it's kind of like the Game of Thrones Hand of the King game, I think.
Yes.
You know, it's certainly much lighter than that.
How good's that game?
Yeah, that game is amazing, but this game sort of scratches that same artistic itch.
Yeah.
In that you get an idea of, maybe not as the Game of Thrones one, specific characters.
Yeah.
But you get the idea, I know I'm the wizard, I'm going to be doing these things, or I know I'm the barbarian, I know I'm going to sort of smash these things. And look, it's some fun.
Yeah.
And it's a bit of fun for a bit of money.
Yeah.
You can certainly spend less money and have less fun.
Yeah.
But
you can also spend more money and have less fun, as we've sadly done in the past.
Oh, yes. So look, for 10 minutes, for a few dollars.
Yeah.
If you like D&D and have a D&D group.
Yep.
Then it is, as you say, that little thing maybe between sessions. Or if you're playing a D&D campaign and someone needs to go to the toilet, you play it while they're on the can and it's done by the time that they are ready to go.
I mean, every D&D session that we run, which is normally hours and hours long, we always have one or two go down and get a new drink from the bar, or if we're at my house, everyone just stretch your legs kind of thing. If some people didn't want to leave the table, this is what this game is for, which, you know, again, it has its place. But while we're at it, now that you've mentioned it, everyone, get on Hand of the King. I'd forgotten until you just mentioned that game. I hadn't played that in a while, but, it's a good one.
Yeah, well,
for so simple.
Don't get on the current Game of Thrones game that has been pulled from Kickstarter, thankfully.
Yeah.
It's appeared on Indiegogo. It's called a Game of Thrones.
The card game.
The only reason we're saying this is so that you don't at all back it.
Yeah, it was in the news today for horrible reasons we are not going to mention, and how it even came to exist. I mean, it'll disappear very, very soon, but just don't even put your money anywhere near it. And it's a horrible state of affairs that, sadly, it affects a lot of industries, and the video game industry sees a lot of horrible things like this. It's kind of moved over to our neck of the woods for just today, and hopefully by tomorrow we can move on and the people involved can maybe get a better life out of it somehow, but that's all I'm going to say. But yeah, it was a thing that happened today.
Yeah. So we're only doing this as a public service announcement so that you don't at all potentially waste money or time or resources on something horrible.
Yep.
So anyway, what we're going to do is throw to a quick song.
Yep.
And then we're just going to do a little bit of housekeeping.
Indeed.
Because one of our favourite 4 days of gaming is currently T-minus 1 month away.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been exciting developments from that in terms of how you can maybe get new games,
swap some
games, and all the games. So here's your song. We'll be back in a moment. It's the Dice Men Cometh. It's Edge Radio, 99.3 FM.
Yes.
Let's talk about everything BorderCon,
uh-huh,
plus a few other little bits and pieces. So let me get to a little bits and piece first,
mm-hmm,
because although BorderCon is happening in a month's time, believe it or not.
Can he wait, mate? Can he wait?
Well, I have to, because anyone who was in Melbourne before that,
yep,
and by that I mean if they are around on the 26th of May,
yep,
in Melbourne,
yep,
should get themselves to the Queen of Spades bar.
Yes, which is in a bloody beautiful place.
I'll have to trust you on that, because I've not been there.
Well, you will.
I will be there.
Yeah.
And we will be there on the Thursday night before BorderCon, what date is?
We will be there on the 6th of June probably dinnerish time until the wee hours, I reckon, before the drive up the next morning to BorderCon.
Until closing time. But before that, good friends of the show,
yep,
Ella from Ella Loves Board Games, and then Stella and Tarrant from Meeple University are hosting their very own, what they're calling a Meeple Mini-Con, which is otherwise known as the Unplug and Play.
Yeah.
And that is going to be on the 26th of May from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. at, again, the Queen of Spades Bar.
Yeah.
And they're just going to be there playing games. They're charging for tickets. I think they're only a little bit of money.
Yeah.
But you can go and play games, not only with celebrities.
Yeah.
In the gaming space.
Yeah. Well, they know us, so they must be.
They're also really lovely people, and no doubt there will be a lot of games to play in the Queen of Spades Bar. I've been assured it's been amazing.
Yes, it is awesome food, awesome drinks, awesome atmosphere. And let me tell you, from a person who's done it a few times, 12 hours at a pub board gaming, mwah.
Love it. So, we've only got a couple of minutes left.
Yep.
And we are approaching BorderCon times.
We are indeed. I am getting excited.
Now, Leon, you take this more seriously than myself and Mark. You have had a to-playlist.
Yes.
Probably since a long weekend, and you have games that are just sitting on the shelf of shame.
Yes.
You haven't played them. You're probably not going to play them, or you've played them and you're going, not quite.
I've been trying to push so many friends on this lifestyle for years that you're seeing games and you're going to go, oh, I really want to play that, but I haven't got around to it in years, and you feel horrible about it. I tell you what, means you probably don't need it anymore. Why don't you sell it on to somebody who's going to enjoy it? You'll have money. You won't have that stress anymore. Everybody wins.
And you spend the money on more games.
Indeed.
So, look, the flea market is out and live and is an evolving document on Board Game Geek. So jump onto BorderCon, search for the flea market, and it just means that instead of, like in past years, having to mule your games to BorderCon, hoping to find a buyer and muling them straight back because the buyer wasn't there, or then no one wanted to buy it, or they bought it and didn't like it and gave it back to you, or any number of reasons, you can have it all sorted out first. There are probably already 150 games there for sale or trade.
I know. I
after
saw
24 hours.
I saw a few there and went, ooh, that's tempting.
Yeah, look. The community is also really good in that you can organise plenty of games to go and play. So if there is something that is on your to-play list, and there's a lot of hot games out there at the moment, the one that springs to mind is that so many people want to play Wingspan, the bird game of birds with birds and little bird eggs by Stegmeier, and has a wonderful designer and art. It just looks amazing. But you'll be able to play that game because there will be several copies, and we should maybe in a future episode put a little bet on what's going to be the most visible game at BorderCon, because a couple of years ago it was Terraforming Mars.
Yeah.
And there is always one game every year that is everywhere.
What was the last year one? I'm not thinking of it at the moment. There was a lot of quacks. Oh, Rajahs of the Ganges.
Rajah of the Ganges.
That was probably it. There was heaps of them. And for good reason, Perler of again.
Correct. But we have to go now, Leon.
Cool.
Because we have to go, well, at least I do, and play some games, and you have to go to bed early because you've got to be up early in the morning, and Leon's old now. He needs his 25 hours of sleep. And Mark is sick.
Yeah.
And we miss him.
Yeah.
But hopefully he'll be back, because, Leon, next week you won't be.
No, I've got to do them night shifts making all the chocolates for all the lung kiddies and, well, all the adults out there, let's be fair.
Exactly. Yeah. I would not have chocolate if it wasn't for you.
Yeah.
And on that bombshell,
this has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.